Colloquium, colloquium.
Pretty much ready to go. I don't know where it's going to go, but we can go.
Let's do it. Yeah, we do. We got a little bulleted list here.
Well, yeah, that's true. So what are you most excited about? Seminary.
I'm not excited at all.
Great. We don't have to put this on.
I'm just kidding. No, I'm just kidding.
That's not an interesting answer.
I was kidding. No, I'm looking forward to the brotherhood that's going to be down there. Mm. I think, honestly, I think just because I haven't been immersed in it in my adult life, you know, as much as I would have liked, I just think my mind and heart is not on spiritual things as much as I would like for it to be. So I'm just looking forward to being in like a full-time spiritual environment.
Yeah.
To reorient myself. So
there's something valuable about that, certainly.
Yeah, there is. Answer?
Hokey.
The Hokey Meister.
Answer, tell him we're on a podcast.
Hokey's calling, everybody. Funny. Okay, yeah.
Okay, we're
no,
gonna
yeah,
answer.
I'm not going to answer. All right,
great.
Yeah,
sorry,
I'm not going to answer.
But you can listen to this and know that time you called Nick and we were on.
That's right.
Yeah, you were could have been on it, but you weren't because we didn't answer it. All right. Yeah, I think of like, would you say that you anticipated it to be similar to your time in Focus in that sense? Like, I feel like Focus Formation was very similar in that, like, you are spending your entire day immersed in spiritual things.
Yeah, I think so. You know, I think I was talking with one of the seminarians a couple weeks ago who's been in the seminary for a while now, and he was talking about how for him, like, being in a Focus environment and then moving to the seminary was a tough switch because, like, Focus is very, like, outgoing. It's very, you know, like you're going out to evangelize, and the seminary is, you know, a lot about like just working on one's relationship with God and personal study and things like that. So I think it's going to be different in that sense, but I am looking forward to that, of being able to spend time like reflecting on my own spiritual life pretty much all day every day, and yeah, the personal study of it. Yeah. And just honestly, I'm looking forward because I feel like I need it, the time to like to grow more as a man of God. You know, so anyway.
Yeah, you need it.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah, no I think it'll, I really do think it'll be so good for your spiritual growth, because I think that like just being in the secular world is hard, and especially when you can't step away. I almost think of those things as a little bit of an overstatement, but like there's almost no excuse not to grow.
You know, when you
have like so many people on your side, working with you to counsel you spiritually, so many people to grow alongside with, so many resources at your disposal. It seems like just such a great opportunity.
Agreed.
I also think I don't know if my time in grad school was like that at all, because, well, one, it was primarily online, and even the classes that I did in person, it felt more, it was nice. It did have aspects of that, but I guess it felt more like Focus type formation or Focus type environment. Because it was the Augustine Institute, it was a program that is academic, but it's also very mission minded. It felt a lot like a Focus circle, but just a little bit more intellectual. Whereas I think you're going to be in an environment that there might be a lot of introverts and a lot of introspection and a lot of not only, of course, prayer, but I guess the first year is spiritual, but then it'll get very, I guess, intellectually heavy with time too.
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, at the end of the day, I just don't really know what to expect in terms of living the life personally. So we'll figure it out here shortly.
You'll be a pro.
That's right.
And by the time our listeners are listening to this, you'll be there.
That's right.
You might be.
Indeed, I will.
You might be well underway.
I might be out at that point.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say that. I didn't want to wish that upon you. But hey, if that's what it takes and that's God's will, and
right,
so be it.
Let it be one done. Day at a time.
Yeah. So we talked last time about, and hopefully release these in the right order where this, it works like this, but I can do that. I have control over that. We talked last time about digital minimalism. I think today we're going to talk a little about today being the same day. We just talked about digital minimalism about 20 minutes ago. But I think that another aspect of this is physical, literal minimalism. And there's a lot of things to talk about here, but the digital world is only one aspect of our life. So what would this look like outside of the digital world in turn when it comes to physical stuff, not just technology, but physical stuff in general, right? Because when you think of materialism, technology can make us very material, but materialism was a problem before the technology age and the informational age. So yeah, let's talk about that.
Yeah, let's do it. For me, the thing that jumps immediately to mind is we had a priest growing up, Father Lewis, who has since passed.
Yep. Yeah, I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, but one of the things that he used to preach about, my dad always loved this, talk about this, but how this like absurd exponential growth of the storage unit as a business, and how people have so much stuff that they need places other than their house to store their extra stuff.
Yes.
And how that is simply not conducive to a healthy spiritual life. So
yeah.
Anyway, hopefully we get to talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah. Did I tell you about Lindsay's mom's comment?
Yes.
About that? Yeah. So she listened to an episode and that was what stood out to her. I think they actually have gotten rid of their storage unit. Yeah. But we'll come back to that. Talk about it. Not because we talked about
that's
it.
No, funny.
We're not that impactful in the world. But I think they were just in the process of moving and building a house. Yeah. And so there might be appropriate uses for storage units, but we'll come back to that in the hot takes. Stay tuned. But yeah, physical minimalism. I think ultimately the question that I'm thinking about, this can encapture a lot from the Christian use of money to the Christian use of things, just physical material things in general. But I guess if we're framing it around the idea of physical minimalism, I think a question we should ask ourselves is, do we have a calling as Christians to minimize the amount of stuff we have?
So you want me to give like a attempted answer at that? I can.
No, it's just a rhetorical question.
Gotcha. Okay, I'll shut up then. No. I think the answer would be that stuff serves a tool-like purpose. They are tools to allow us to live meaningful and satisfying lives. Sounds very familiar from our last podcast.
Yeah.
And if those things are getting in the way or do not serve that purpose, they should be eliminated from our lives. So, I think there is not a threshold of the amount of stuff that we can have as Christians. It's more on what are we using those things for and are those serving a appropriate purpose?
Yeah, I think it's definitely going to relate to the digital minimalism because some of the principles are going to be the same in that, you know, are we using things or are these things controlling us? Are we enslaved? This is the problem with materialism in general. You know, are we being enslaved to material desires? Or are we using material things for spiritual goals, right? For spiritual good. And that's ultimately what the question comes down to. A lot of overlap. The reasons for the difficulty of the two, whether it be digital or physical things, might vary, right? And some people might struggle with one or the other. But it comes, I think it's the same reasons, right, why we would pursue minimalism, be it digital or physical. I think it's also an interesting question because I think there is an interesting kind of biblical... There are interesting traditions on this, both biblically and in Christian history. So I think the three, and I kind of just jotted down three biblical kind of precedents for this, I think, or actually two are precedents for maybe a minimalist mindset. And one of the things I mentioned will be actually maybe a counterpoint. So first, I think most famous passage that would have to do with getting rid of stuff, right? Minimalism would be Mark 10, the rich young man. You know, he comes to Jesus. What must I do to have eternal life? Jesus says, follow the 10 commandments. He says, I do those. Jesus says, okay, if you want to be perfect, go sell what you have, give to the poor. Now, I've dissected this passage before. Generally, the way the Christian tradition has received this is some people should do that, right? That's not a universal call. We can't literally all sell everything we have because then there'd be no buyers of the things we have, right? But this is a radical call for some people to live radically, right? People who take a vow of poverty,
right,
for example, do this. The second thing I have is not a... this. I guess this isn't a biblical precedent, even though I put it under that. It was just the Evangelical Council of Poverty. Are you frowning?
No, I was squinting. Okay.
You know what Evangelical Council is, right?
Yes. Remind us of the clear definition. Poverty, chastity, and obedience, right?
Yes, poverty, chastity, and obedience. These are the vows that religious take, but they're also referred to as the Evangelical Councils and proposed for all the laity to live as well to the extent that is appropriate for their state in life. So even though you and I have not taken a vow of poverty, chastity, or obedience, we're still called to those virtues. And they're still virtues, right? So poverty isn't something just for people who've taken a vow of poverty. Okay, which is, I think, kind of a radical and challenging idea for most Christians to think about, oh, I'm called to poverty. But I think the church has certainly embraced this. And maybe in a minute we'll get into some of the reasons why when we talk about the fruits.
Sure.
Jump in. If I was going to go to my other biblical kind
of... Nope, go number three.
Take. Okay.
Save it.
Joseph of Arimathea. He might be a kind of counterpoint to this, right? Or at least the flip side of the coin or the other perspective that is worth considering. Because who was he? He was a rich man who offered his burial place to the Lord.
Yep.
Right? So, and then we see this tradition gets received by... Or maybe another biblical example of something like this is the woman who lavishly anoints Jesus' feet with perfume, right? And Judas complains and says, shouldn't we give this money to the poor? And Jesus says, the poor will be with you always, I will not. Right? So there's clear biblical precedence for spending money on Jesus, yeah, right? And to spend money, you have to own money, mm-hmm, right? And Joseph of Arimathea is a rich man. So I think there's, and that also gets received in the Christian tradition of, you know, while there's poverty, can live out the gospel in a really radical way. There's also, one might say, and I have my reservations about this, that wealth can also live out the gospel in a radical way. I think of Dave Ramsey is a, you know, he's the finance guy, get out of debt guy. He's a Christian. And he says, you know, one of his big things is you live like no one else now so that you can give like no one else later. So you're living simply to save money, to save, right, and to build wealth so that you can give it lavishly, mm-hmm, to others. Now, great intentions there. I think there are some problems with the idea of having this permanently saving mindset so that I can later give, because I think we need to give constantly. And even Dave would say, tithe 10% no matter what, even when you have other financial goals and you're not rich yet. But I think that is definitely a something to consider, right? Is if I have wealth, I can bless a lot of people.
Yep.
And I think there's kind of two potential paths as far as how do we deal with stuff and money in the Christian world.
Yeah. Clearly, this is a complicated issue. I think Thomas Aquinas is really illuminating here of just using money as a... I don't know what the explicit language he uses at the moment, just using money as like a neutrality, you know, whatever it is.
Don't love money for its
right.
own sake.
Not for its right. own sake. Yeah. That's exactly right. So, yeah. Now, having said that, there are some significant obstacles to being wealthy, such as, you know, the greater amount of things, resources one has, the greater opportunity that thing becomes to become an idol in one's life. You know, so I think it takes a significant amount of virtue and discernment and spiritual strength, you know, to be wealthy and be a proper practicing Christian. So there are some caveats there, I think.
Yeah, I think in some ways, if you look at the two paths before you, I think that the biblical precedent would be that the easier path to heaven is actually poverty.
Poverty is the easier one. In some sense, you know, you see a lot of poor people that are deep in sin, to be quite honest.
Right.
You know, that come from really rough backgrounds. And, I've seen it firsthand, especially as a teacher. You know, so that's not necessarily the case. But, yes, I would say that for a Christian, like, leaning towards poverty seems to be the preferred pathway, sure. The better part, if you will.
And I say biblical because, you know, we think of the camel through the eye of the needle,
mm-hmm.
That Jesus talks about. Like, I think Jesus's words are clear in warning people against the allure of riches.
That's an interesting story. It's fascinating to me. Honestly, mystifying because Jesus says, no, it's easier than, camel going through the eye of a needle is easier to, you know, than for someone who is rich to inherit the kingdom of God. And Peter says something that's really fascinated to me. He says, so who then can be saved? Which makes it seem like Jesus is speaking to pretty much everyone. You know, because surely Peter would have realized that there are people that are mm-hmm. not rich, you know, but... So to me, that's a really, it's a very interesting story, and that maybe has a little bit of a deeper layer to it.
Well, yeah, and it does. And I think what's going on in Peter's mind there is, you know, keep in mind the first century Jewish context. They think that being rich is a blessing from God, right? Because we see all throughout the gospel, we see these instances of people saying, you know, when somebody sinned, who sinned, him and or his parents? Sorry, when somebody's poor or sick, who sinned, them or their parents, right? So Peter's looking at it, I believe, from this perspective of a typical first century Jew of the rich people are the good ones. They're the holy ones.
Mm.
So if it's that hard for a rich person to enter heaven, then who can be saved?
Ah,
so Jesus is flipping that on its stomach. But you do raise a good point in that it's not saying Jesus is it. We shouldn't interpret Jesus as saying that having money is really hard to get to heaven we should be careful on how we interpret.
Right.
I haven't thought about how being precise in my speech with this yet. To reference Jordan Peterson again. But let me finish. So I think what he is doing though is he's one challenging the conception of being, you know, rich will lead you to heaven. But two, he's making the point that it's impossible on our own to get to heaven, right? It's impossible on our own because Jesus says at the end, you know, but all things are possible for God.
Right.
So part of the point too is that we don't want to be relying on ourselves for salvation in the first place. And this is where I think it ties back into being rich versus being poor, being attached to material things versus being detached is sometimes in our attachment to material things, we are trying to provide for ourselves and not be dependent on God, which goes back to the main point of being dependent on God.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, I like that.
Do you remember what you're going to jump in and say?
No, I don't. That was good.
Bring it back if it comes up.
Yeah.
But yeah, so let's talk about maybe the fruits of Christian poverty, because I just think it's clear if we're to look at the biblical account, like it's clear that there's something to this poverty thing. Whether it's, you know, looking at the examples we mentioned already, or even, you know, Jesus talks about don't store up your treasure in barns, right? There's this constant call to detachment from material things. And so what do I think it does? I think one, dependence on God. And there's a humility with that to recognize that we're dependent on God and not on ourselves.
Yeah, can I say something about that one really quick? Yeah, one of the most powerful, I think, formational exercises in the church is this practice that Jesuit novitiates do. Are you familiar with their 30-day silent retreat? No, yeah, the 30-day silent retreat is amazing. But one of the things that they do during their first year is they literally drop off their novitiates, the people that are the novices, like, I don't know, some distance from the wherever they're staying, and they leave them like $10-$20, I don't know, however much it is, and their job is to get back.
I have heard of this, yeah.
And the exercise is literally, you know, you don't really have enough money to get back on your own. You don't have means of transportation on your own, any of that. Like, it's a dependence on God to take you to, you know, back home, as part of your, you know, increase in trust, which is just really, really powerful. You know, that's a great example of what it means to, you know, use poverty as a means to rely on God more fully.
Right. And can you depend on God when you're rich? Well, maybe, right? But the material things that you have themselves are obstacles to that. And I think that's
the
point of the gospel. Mm-hmm. So, well said, well said. Detachment from materialism, I have. This just, I think, goes with the other points. Well, okay, well, no, this is separate. So detachment from material things, I think, is necessary. It goes back to the slavery freedom thing, right? Is we can become enslaved to material things, mm-hmm. and we need to detach. I think of maybe an example I think of this actually goes back to digital minimalism because it involves my phone. But I remember the first time ever I was in college, like just taking some steps away from my phone use. And I would start doing things like just leave it in the other room or leave it in the car or whatever. And I just found this freedom of not having this mm-hmm. material thing on me all the time.
Yeah.
And so I think it's about freedom versus slavery, and poverty in some ways, ironically, frees us from those attachments.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. Attachments is a great word. Yeah. Versus detachment. You already said it, detachment from material things, but you know, the opposite of that is attachment, which I feel a lot, you know, I just feel very attached to, you know, one of the examples that I think of is my Apple Watch. Like, I just feel like very, mm-hmm. like literally it's attached to me, you know, so yeah. whenever I remove it, it always feels very freeing, like you said.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of my favorite spiritual masters in the tradition is St. John of the Cross. And he's huge on, you know, just detachment from material things in order mm-hmm. to focus on the things of God. And he uses the image of like a bird literally being like attached to the ground with, I think it's a string.
Yeah.
And, like how, you know, flight requires a, you know, removal of that string for the bird. So mm-hmm. anyway, that's a really powerful image I've always turned back to.
And I think it's something, attachment is something that's so easy to struggle with, and like almost anyone can slip into it, especially mm-hmm. if you have any amount of wealth, right? Just in the standpoint, one way I feel this, I think, is I have, I don't know. I'm drinking a sparkling water right now, right? I really enjoy just whether it's tea or coffee or just a nice drink, right? Like just little things like that. And it's like I can go out to the store anytime I want, and I'm not wealthy by most American standards, but I can buy, you know, whatever I want to sip on,
mm-hmm.
you know, whatever snack I want at the grocery store. Right. And I'm actually not very good at denying myself those things when I want them. You know, I do fasting and I don't eat meat on Fridays and things like that. But for the most part, I can just replace those things I fast from with other kind of just comforts.
Right.
Right. And so I think it's just so easy to attach ourselves to something and maybe not even realize how attached we are.
Yeah. Yeah, good point.
And it's also hard to draw the line because some people might say, well, what's wrong with that? You know, what's wrong with having a nice snack every now and then?
Yeah, nothing. Not necessarily, you know. I think the distinction is, I think this is a helpful question. It's not always a good question just because some things are so minimal sometimes. But, mm-hmm. you know, if God were to ask you to give up that thing, would you be able to do it? you know, and I think that that's a really helpful, it's very simple, it's a really helpful question of like, no, I don't think I could. Like, that's a sign that maybe you're attached to that thing,
right?
You know, because you know, at the end of the day, it's reliance fully on God and nothing else, you know.
And I think we're gonna have some attachments, but it's maybe starting with recognizing what is really hindering our growth. You know, one thing I think about is like, what if this were taken away? What if God asked me to get rid of this? But also, like, I just think of the ways in which by building attachments, even if they're seemingly harmless, I'm becoming accustomed to comfort, right? And then when things that make me comfortable are taken away, I grumble and complain, or I don't do well with it, right? And so that's one reason why I'm wary of even like seemingly harmless attachments. And again, I think you could be scrupulous in this and ridding out attachments, but I am wary of even harmless, seemingly harmless attachments, because I see what it does then when, okay, I'm in some place where I don't have access to, you know, go to the grocery store and get the snacks I want or the drinks I want or whatever. It's like, I realized that I was kind of using some of those things as a crutch maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I see that for sure.
So yeah, I think that's, we got to detach, not be scrupulous about it, but I think there is a detachment from materialism that's necessary.
Yep.
And then the ability to focus on people, not things. I think this is a real fruit of living poverty and detachment from material things, is that, you know, we're meant to love people and use things, and sometimes we get that backwards.
Yeah. Yeah, I was telling you about the minimalists, the group that had that really famous Netflix documentary show or whatever it was, and they have a really popular podcast, I think, too, but their thing, their mantra is use people, not things. No. The other way around. I didn't think that's right. Yeah. Use things, not people. Yeah. Not use people, not things.
Well, and that's even core to like theology of the body. Like that's a major premise of love and responsibility, is like people are to be loved and not used, and things on the converse are to be used and not loved.
Yeah, that's right.
Often when we sin, we're just flipping that.
Right. Yeah.
Most of the time, actually, you could probably categorize most sins as either using people or loving things in an ordinate way.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, so we can focus on people with poverty. And I think it also allows us to focus on spiritual things. So, you know, material, there is a, you know, it's interesting because as Christians, we aren't these, like, we're not materialists, but we're also not Gnostics, right? We believe that the physical matters and the physical is important and good and beautiful. And God gave us things to be appreciated, right? They're gifts from God. But at the same time, letting go of physical things, material things, can allow us to detach from them so that we can attach to the Creator, right? It's like when somebody gives you a gift and you love the gift more than the person who gave it to you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good, okay, that's a good little example.
Yes, that person is going to be great, is going to be glad that you loved their gift, right? But the gift giver is greater than the gift that they gave you. And so detaching from those material things, those physical things, can allow us to refocus on the source of those things.
Mm-hmm. That's true. Yeah, I just think from a experiential point of view, I know for someone who, I mean, I have, you know, I more money than most of the world's population statistically, you know, and I have the ability to go out and buy things. And I know how much it occupies my mind. It's not all day, every day, but it is often, you know, like there's always something new to buy, you know, whether it be like the next car I'm going to purchase, or like the next, you know, button down shirt I want, or new shoes, or whatever it is, you know, there's always something new to buy. And just how much of that can occupy my mind is amazing, you know, and that just prevents me from focusing on, you know, pursuing our Lord more fully.
Yeah. And I think when I talk to people who live out poverty radically, like in religious vocations, they, definitely see that as something like beautiful and simplifying and freeing in their life. It's like, I don't have to worry about where all these things are coming from or how I'm going to pay for all these things, because I am living in such a way that I don't own things, but in the process of that, I'm provided for, right? I'm trusting radically independent on God to provide for me. And in some ways that relieves a lot of burdens, right? But I also think that it's important that we embrace a life of poverty, kind of like what you were saying with, you know, we live in this world where like we're richer than ever, you know, like capitalism has gotten us to this place where we just have so much money. And yet so many of us still think we're poor, right? You know, it's like you were saying, yep. It's like, you know, neither of us would be considered upper class. Like, you know, I make relatively little money. And yet, you know, we're far richer than the vast majority of people that have ever lived. And yet we still kind of think that, like, even I'm tempted to think that at times. It's like, I am poor, right? You look at home values and you look at all these things, that the expense of living in the world. And it's almost like the expense of living in the world has just gone up and up and up because we make things necessary that maybe aren't, right? And yep. I think that for another reason why living out poverty is so important is that if we don't attempt to live out poverty, if we don't attempt to detach from material things, then we're going to continue to feel poor as we get richer and richer. Why? Because we think we need more and more things.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's essential to reflect on this concept in order to not get stuck in that I'm constantly in need when in reality I have way more than I could ever need.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I was going to say, is materialism seems to be very all-consuming. You know, it never ends and you're always going to be wanting more and more. And yeah, there was just never being into that. So, yeah. Yep, good insight.
So what are the different ways then that Christians live out detachment from materialism or poverty, however we want to talk about it? Obviously, it's going to look different in different vocations. So
yeah.
Religious life, I kind of mentioned before, is probably the most radical, mm-hmm. right? You know, religious, they technically don't own things, right? They take a vow of poverty, and anything that they do own belongs to the community. And depending on the order, they either are working to provide for the community, like, you know, making like Benedictines, right? Pray and work. You know, they're producing a good, they're farming, whatever it is. And then, you know, or they might be mendicants, you know, like the Franciscans or Dominicans, in which case they're relying on charity for their support, right? Whether that's physically on the streets, like some, especially the medieval ones, or through the form of operating as a charity and asking for money. But most of these priests, they live in, you know, very radical poverty. They're provided for their basic needs, but they don't have money to go spend on whatever they want. And anything they own, it belongs to the community. And so that's, I think, a really radical way. And what I've always seen in religious is I just see that freedom that gives them in the way that they live.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, one of the phrases that I have heard often, but especially since I've started, you know, thinking about going to seminary, is simplicity of life. And, you know, poverty tends to create that, doesn't it? It's just like this, for example, priests and religious wear the same thing every day. Mm-hmm. That's very simple. And, you know, that honestly, think about, I know for me, that would just eliminate a whole thing altogether in my mind about decisions I have to make or whatever. You know, there's no decision about mm-hmm. what shirt I'm going to wear, what pants I'm going to wear, what shoes I'm going to put on, you know, oh, we're going to this fuck. Like, that eliminates that. You wear the same thing to everything, essentially. Yeah. So that's an example of just having a sort of simplicity of life that allows the mind and soul to elevate.
Yeah, let's talk about the diocesan priesthood, since you brought it up. Because this is one, the relationship between poverty and the diocesan priesthood is interesting to me, because they don't take formal vows of poverty, from what I understand, and they have to own things because of the nature of their role in the world and running parishes and whatnot. And so diocesan priests, they get a salary. They don't make a lot of money, but they own things, right? But I like what you said about the simplicity of life, right? They're provided for and taken care of. And their needs are simple in terms of clothing, in terms of shelter. You know, most live in a rectory at the parish, right? So it's they have their basic accommodations taken care of. But then they get this basic salary. And one of the things I've seen in many of the priests that I've gotten to know is that, well, one, I think it's important that you embrace poverty as a mentality, because then you can recognize it's like, okay, I'm going to provide for my needs, and then everything else is for the sake of the people.
Yep.
Right? So I've seen priests, like, and I've heard priests talking about where it's like, I want to have the ability to go and buy somebody's dinner, to go, you know, help this homeless man on the street. Like, I want to have the financial ability to, you know, actually be able to do that. So I think that poverty can be lived out. And I think actually some very holy priests can be an example for the laity as well in how to live out poverty. And that is that they do get money. They do get a paycheck. Their basic needs are provided for. And then, at least the way I've seen this lived out by some priest, everything else is God's in the poor's.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a really radical way to live, and it makes a lot of logical sense, especially in that particular vocation, you know, because one huge element is obviously they're not providing for their family. They don't have one. So
yeah.
That leaves the money to go to their, you know, their family, which is the community that they serve. So yep. And that might take different forms. You know, I think this gets a little bit complicated too, because you have things that might not necessarily be needs, you know, that priests could own, you know, it's not only that priests have to give all of their money away to, you know, to serve the community. You know, a priest could own a guitar, for example, or at least I hope so, because I own one, you know, like, and that's the thing that gives gives them life and enriches their life as a whole. So anyway, there's things, you know, that priests can own, even if it is not for someone else. It's not as though it's as simple as, you know, as we're making it out to be. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I guess I don't know.
That is a good point.
Yeah. I guess I don't have one thing that I'm missing is, I guess I don't have like a sentence long philosophy on how priests live out their poverty.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So
yeah. Cause I mean, I've also seen priests who, you know, at least from the outside, don't seem to be living out poverty, right? Mm-hmm. They are buying all sorts of nice things that you might look at and say, yeah, is that really necessary for a priest? And some of that, you know, like, you can't from the outside sit and judge, you know, he might drive a nice car, but we don't know. He might give 90% of his salary to the poor, and that's just 10% he saved, and that's the one nice thing he's bought for himself. You know, like, so there definitely is a lot of personal discretion in how you do that. But I just, think I like the idea of how, because a priest, a diocesan priest, is provided for in his bare necessities, and he doesn't have the obligation that, you know, a father of a family might have, he has the ability to be, it's, I think of like radical availability that we talked about in Focus. Like,
yeah,
Focus Missionaries, the goal was like, your time is radically available to serve the people. Like, priests are supposed to be radically available too, but I like the idea of like, you know, I get this paycheck and I like, my bills are paid for the most part. So what can I do with this to give of it radically?
Yeah.
Whereas I think a father of a family, you know, can be more burdened with, okay, like, I've got this extra money in my paycheck, but my kids have got to go to college and I want them to go to private school. And like, there's just so many burdens of the world that get placed and can feel restricting as to then being charitable with your money.
That's true. Yep.
Okay, so I guess the last one, well, I mean, I guess there's single life, you know, consecrated single life in general would look similar, I'd say, to diocesan priesthood as well.
Yeah, it might. Yeah.
You might not have the same financial burdens and obligations. And so I think you do have the ability to be radically generous, or you do have the ability to be selfish, you know, with that money. But we're all called to be a gift of self. And then there's marriage. And this is, I think, where it's the hardest, honestly.
I agree. This is a really interesting one. Yeah. I'll take a stab at it first.
Okay, go.
So in marriage, I think it is a very noble practice to, and I want to be careful the way that I say this, but I think it's very noble to appear as though, even if you do have a lot of money, regardless of whether you have a lot of money, to live in a perceived simple lifestyle. And what I mean is, for example, I don't know that buying a mansion in the hills with 6 bedrooms, you know, with, you know, 2 kids is the right approach versus buying, even if you could afford it, versus buying a house in a, you know, much simpler neighborhood that suits your needs.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know if that's ever okay.
So this reminds me of something that BB says. Big Brain, Big Bird.
Big Bird, Bishop Barron?
Nope, Bishop Barron.
It'd been funny if it was actually Big Bird this time.
He says his recommend. No, it's not Big Bird.
It's good for it.
Go ahead. No, Bishop Barron says his advice to people for poverty, and this applies to priests, lay people, you know, whatever, is, you know, if you're buying, let's say, a car, right? What can I afford? And then buy one step down from that.
That's a really good principle.
To practice like self-denial in that little way.
I'm glad he's Bishop Barron and I'm not.
Yeah, what would you say? Go one step up because it's nicer and you have credit.
So. That's what I was trying to say, just in like a very inarticulate sort of thing. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not necessarily about, like, you may not be called to live in the 1-bedroom house with 5 kids, right?
Right, right.
Especially if you have the money and can provide more, right? That may not, that's probably not what God is calling you to, because you need to, you know, it's important to provide for the material needs of your family. But yeah, think about, you know, am I being lavish in this? Or in what ways can I just practice that self-denial or detachment in little ways? And that's why I think that's important for a worldly, quote unquote, worldly vocation like marriage, is that you're just going to have so many temptations towards materialism because you have an obligation to provide for the material needs of your family. Mm-hmm. And so the ways in which you can kind of dial that back, I think, are really important. And that's why it's such good advice from Big Bird.
Yeah. BB.
Is that disrespectful to call him that?
Nah, he loves it. He listens.
Bishop Barron. Yeah, I'm sure he does. He had some like kid on his podcast once. All right, let's not go there. All right. Okay. Yeah, it is tough. I think it's so tough in marriage, though, when you have that responsibility. And I think of Father Jonathan and I had a conversation about this once. I remember we were grabbing coffee, and you know, I was probably a year or two into teaching, and he just, you know, he was asking me how, you know, what I was, how I was liking it, et cetera. And he, you know, he was kind of joking a little bit, but after, he's like, so, you know, no, you're not going to get rich doing this. Like, is this what you want to do the rest of your life? And it's like, honestly, I think so. And I think this is something God's calling me to. This is a, you know, a career path that God's calling me to. And I think that he's calling me to marriage and a family, and, you know, hopefully a big family as well. And if God's calling me to both of those things, like, I have to trust that he'll provide, right? That there will be a path forward in that. And what Father Jonathan said to me in response was, because he was kind of joking, half joking about the, you know, you're not going to get rich doing this thing. And he kind of got serious for a minute, and he said, you know, there's a lot of rich Catholic families out there. There aren't a lot of examples of, there aren't a lot of like prominent examples of poverty mm-hmm. in the sense that, like, I don't know, I think especially in college ministry, you know, in the time we spent with Focus, with college ministry, like, you know, we met with all, we had mission partners, we met with all sorts of Catholic families who were just desiring to give. And this is maybe something to be said for people who live in abundance, but give in abundance mm-hmm. as well. I think we encountered a lot of those people, but I think it's less often that we encounter a family that lives in poverty. In some ways, just because they're less visible sometimes. Poverty is, it's a, in some ways, a quiet vocation, right? It's a quiet lifestyle. But there also is just fewer kind of prominent examples. You don't notice the people who live in poverty. Sometimes they fly under the radar because they don't make as big of a splash, I guess. Mm-hmm. But that we're called to that, you know, like that's that can be something that we might be called to. So
yep.
Good yeah, stuff. I don't know. It just resonated with me when he said that.
Good stuff.
All right, so I guess the last thing before our hot takes I want to touch on is just that. I think that it's harder in the modern world to live out poverty. And I just, when I think of like all our means of existence, sustenance, money, things like, you know, I got a list here, 401ks, insurance, investing, house payments, debt financing, like these things are overwhelming and they're all oriented at like providing for our own needs. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a whole nother conversation, and you and I and many of our peers have had lengthy conversations about proper Catholic way for a Catholic to spend money and invest and save and all that. And there's, you know, New Polity is leading kind of some of these conversations, and there's all sorts of things to be said and debates to be had. But I think here, for the purpose of this conversation, I just want to make an observation that something like saving for retirement comes from a spirit of I need to provide for myself so that somebody else doesn't have to. Right. And I think these things can train us to not be dependent on God, right?
Yeah,
but to be true. Dependent on ourselves. Same with insurance, right? I don't want to, God forbid, I ever am stuck in a need of dependence, right? Be it health, car, home insurance, whatever, right? And then I actually need to rely on others or mm-hmm. God to help me. So I'm going to have this insurance policy. And now when I need help, you know, it's covered by my insurance. But all these things then make our lives just more expensive, right? Because we're trying to cover for the possibility that we're ever in need. And so I think this kind of world we live in and these financial systems we live in can make it very difficult to be detached from material things, because we're always seeking this rather from this freedom from attachment, we're seeking this freedom from dependence on God.
Yeah, that's a really good point. Yeah, it's all like all of these safety nets in place, you know, for our fears that we don't trust that God will deliver
literally
us from. Yeah,
the financial system we live in is just a series of safety nets to protect us from harm.
Yeah. Wow. That's interesting. Yeah. That's really, really good insight. Yeah. I think for me, one thing I'll add is just the way our culture tends to emphasize materialism in various ways. A couple of examples I'll use is just, you know, the latest shoe that seems to come out every day or whatever, you know, and I've got to have the latest shoe. And so therefore I'll buy 10 pairs of shoes. And same with the latest trends requires a lot of, you know, material purchases. We've talked about cars already, you know, a new car brand comes out every year. And so, you know, just things like that. It just makes it really, the pressures are really hard in our culture to live out poverty and to avoid spending money on things consistently. So,
the new iPhone that comes out.
Like, another great example.
There's over $1,000 when the iPhone comes out. Like
people need phones it
every used year. To be $60.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, and that's not all inflation, right? Like obviously it's a phone that does way more, but it's like, that one thing in your life is cost more than 10 times what it used to.
Yep.
And you can't even buy the older ones.
Yeah, that's right.
Right? Like there's a limit on how old of a phone you can buy even. Right. So there's so many things that just force us in that direction and keep us from living simply.
Yeah.
It definitely is frustrating. And it does require us to take steps to step out of those systems. Not few people are going to be able to do it completely, which is where I think, you know, maybe it's starting with principles like the one step down, right? What can you afford? Go one step down.
Yeah.
Right? And I think actually Bishop Barron would add, and give the difference to the poor.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
That's really good.
I think the last thing, I think before we jump into our hot takes, I think I think it's important to say, this is something Dave Ramsey talks about. I don't think it's talked about a lot in the church as much as it could be. We talk about tithing generally, but like, I think it definitely has come up in our focus conversations as well, or in our focus training as well. But like the importance of tithing, and tithing not out of your leftover money, but like tithing first, giving the first 10%. And as far as I understand, there's not like the precepts of the church doesn't spell out 10%, but 10% is it's biblical. It has a longstanding tradition, and you know, Dave Ramsey, for example, treats that as like, that is non-negotiable. Like you give that first 10% to God and you'll make do with whatever. And there's all sorts of biblical and just examples in Christian lives of how that one makes you dependent on God, and two, like how God will reward that and how you're not going to lose because you're tithing,
mm-hmm.
right? You're not going to go broke because you're giving money to the poor, right? Or you might, but God will provide for you. Like it will be okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great.
So I think tithing, if we're talking about detached from material, the first thing you can probably do is set that aside. And if you can't start with 10, because the reality is some people may not, if you're not tithing, you may not be able to start there, right? Start with whatever you can, and every paycheck, give that to God first.
Yep. That's good. No comments.
All right, hot takes. You know what I was thinking? I was thinking of like the, I think it's like Jimmy Fallon has like the hashtags. The
does he really? I haven't seen that in a while.
So it'd be like hot takes. But it's like okay. Hot takes.
Gotcha. Okay. I'm just going to copy his, huh?
Yeah, we might get sued when we get all his listeners. gosh, are we ready to go here? All right, I've got, is debt bad?
Is debt bad? I would say avoid debt, yes. But, I mean, I think I'm very Dave Ramsey-like here. Hang on, I got to sneeze.
Woo-wee. We'll edit that out. No sneezing on the podcast.
All right, I did it. I'm very Dave Ramsey-like here in that it seems like a very, very, very tough ask to ask people not to go into debt when like buying a house seems mm-hmm. to be in the picture. You know, it just seems very hard. So anyway, I think that's what I would say is going into debt is avoid it if possible. In certain circumstances, it should be okay.
Yeah. Well, that's actually Dave's advice is he says avoid it in everything except a house because you might not be able to in buying a house. But yeah, I think, I mean, this could be a whole nother conversation too. I'd say I'm essentially in agreeance with you there. I think there are also some philosophical and biblical concerns that we should have about debt that we don't necessarily think about because so much of our financial system is just assumes debt,
mm-hmm.
assumes that debt's a normal part of life. But what does debt do? Well, it actually enslaves you to the lender, right? And with, especially when it's usurious, which again, a whole nother conversation about what makes something usury, and Catholics debate this all the time. But, you know, if you do something that's obvious, you know, it's like if you're, you know, you have this super high interest rate on this loan, like you are, and it's beyond your means to pay it back. Like you are enslaved to this, and debt by its very nature, even in smaller ways, has this enslaving kind of relationship between the debtor and the lender. And that, I think if we look at the Old Testament, we see everything in the story of Israel is about being free from slavery. And I think that it should, at the very least, it should make us wary of what debt does to us. And I think that Dave has done a lot of good work in making people realize that, hey, maybe I can actually live without debt. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing.
Yep, that's good.
Are storage units bad?
Oh yeah, they're of the devil. No, I'm just kidding. Like, there's a new storage unit facility popping up on every street corner, it seems like.
Totally, it's absolutely
unbelievable. Yeah, there's one going on. There's one going up right by me and my brother's house. But anyway, to the extent that they are becoming popular, yes, I think that's terrible. I do not think they're inherently bad, just because there seems to be some very reasonable situations. Yeah. Like, I don't know, say someone is moving and needs like a temporary place to put their stuff for the time being. That seems like a really nice thing to be able to use. So anyway, there's great uses, but just the explosion of storage units is terrible.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the explosion of storage units probably has multiple causes. I think one of them is materialism. We have too much stuff and we need places to store it. I think the other probably has to do with, we're a very transient society now. So I think people are moving and moving cross country and having less permanent homes more and more often, and storage units kind of provide help for some of that. And that maybe isn't good, but it's not necessarily because of materialism in the same way. But I think it is something to be wary of. You know, Jesus specifically tells I feel like this is the first century equivalent. He says, don't build barns and store your stuff because you have too much stuff to store. Don't build new barns to store all your stuff. Right. Where
it's a direct example, it's just going to decay.
Like, he literally is saying, like, if you have too much stuff and you're building new barns to put stuff in it, that's bad. So if you're at the point where it's like, I have all these nice things and I just can't fit them in my house, like, maybe that is a sign that the storage unit isn't the solution and you should detach from those things, which leads us to the third hot take. What about clutter?
Clutter. I hate to put you on the spot. Would you define what you mean by clutter?
Of course. I guess I just mean having too many things and just having too many material things in your house.
That's bad.
That is bad. Yeah, I think I set that one up for easy answer there. It's a slam dunk.
That's right.
Yeah, keyword, too many.
Man, that made me look like a leading expert on that topic. Yeah,
really.
That's bad.
But yeah, I mean, I think that's like, if you're at the point where it's like, I have all these things and I want to keep them, but I don't have room to store them. Well, maybe that's a sign that
it's time.
You shouldn't keep them, right?
It's time.
And there's different reasons people do that. Sometimes it's like, I know there's the whole hoarding phenomenon, which maybe isn't, I don't know, maybe that sometimes that's like more of a mental kind of psychological struggle than it is like a spiritual per se. But
yeah,
I think it also isn't always that. Like, sometimes it's just we become attached to our things. And this is something I've been doing, is just looking around at the things that I own. And I mean, there's all sorts of, this is a, I think, a secular trend too, is just like looking at things and being like, hey, is this bringing me joy? You know, or is this, am I going to use this? Have I used this in the last 6 months?
Yeah.
If the answer is no, how likely is it that you will in the next 6 months? If the answer is no, then probably don't need it.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The minimalists, I mentioned them earlier. I think I heard this from them, but they talked about one time the practice of, this guy put like everything he owned into boxes, literally everything he owned. And this is really radical, I know, but, and every time he needed a thing, he would take it out of the box and put it in his place. And then I think after 2 months, whatever was still in the boxes, he got rid of. This is kind of very similar to what you're talking about, but I just thought that was really a really cool example of like, all right, that's it. I'm done. Like, I'm going to get rid of the things that I really don't need.
Yeah. That's great. And I think that, like, that's a good starting place. I think that there also, though, is a sense of that won't necessarily lead to detachment. I think that sometimes we, I think it's related to the idea that sometimes I think we, especially as like Christians or and Catholics, we might, Catholic being a specific kind of Christian, we might idolize poverty in the sense that like, oh, if I just got rid of all these things, right, and just lived a simple life, like then my life would be great, right? But what do we really seek? It's like a life without responsibility sometimes in that. And I think that poverty, to go back to the beginning, is like it's dependence on God, right? So it's not getting rid of stuff so that my life is less cluttered, although that is a good thing. It's getting rid of stuff so that I can be dependent on God. And that's a different perspective, because that might mean that I get rid of something that I really like and do use that I don't need.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point.
And that's where I think we as Christians can take a step further than just from a worldly perspective. Oh, I could minimize, be a minimalist and have fewer stuff for my own benefit. Poverty's, it will benefit you, but it's ultimately God-focused.
Yep. Yeah, that's true.
Good stuff. Good stuff. All right. You want to go after this, go to our storage units and close them down?
Sounds good. I was just going to put a couple extra things in there while I was thinking about it.
Good idea. All right. Here's the thing. I'll put your stuff. I'll take five things of yours and get rid of them.
Good idea.
In my storage unit.
Good idea.
Okay. And you don't get five things of mine.
No, that's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fair. That's You're fine. Going to seminary.
It's a fair deal. Don't need them. Yeah, that's right. Right.
Remember when I told you that? I said, "What are you going to give me your car when you go to seminary?"
Oh, did you say that to me?
Yeah.
The answer is no.
Yeah, that's what you said. Believe it or not, that is consistent. You have
like a three-year-old car.
It's actually only 2 years old. It's pretty new. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
But I guess it just, I was thinking, it's like, yeah, you know, like, if you're joining a religious order, you'd have to get rid of it, but that's you're not, so.
I'm not.
You get to keep it for now.
What the heck does that mean?
I don't know.
Watch your back, Nick. Okay.
I don't really need your car.
Good stuff.
All right, good conversation. Well, until next time, I don't know when this will come out, but it'll be a while from now. Praise be Jesus Christ.
Now and forever.
Amen.
Amen.